Public Enemy.
Hey everybody, welcome to the weekend interview show for the 26th of November 2005. I'm Scott Horton. My website is weekendinterviewshow.com. Also, I'm an assistant editor for antiwar.com. I want to mention very quickly Derek's Martial Arts Gym on West Alpine off of South Congress here in Austin, Texas, teaching Muay Thai and Kali, available at dmag.us for Derek's Martial Arts Gym. .us and also libertystickers.com. I made up all the good ones and then I sold the company to Rick. So buy some stickers from Rick and tell him I sent you so maybe he'll give me some more money. All right, so that's the introduction to the show. First guest today is J.D. Cash. He's a reporter from the McCurtain County Gazette in southeastern Oklahoma. And for the past 10.5 years, he's been writing about the Oklahoma City bombing. And since there are more and more breaking developments in this story, really throughout this whole last year, I figured it's about time to bring J.D. Cash back on to discuss the current news breaking in the Oklahoma bombing case. Welcome back to the show, J.D.
Are we on there, Scott?
Oh, I can hear you now.
Okay. We had a little interruption.
Yeah, that's all right. So welcome back to the show. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
That's great. Okay, so, you know, we only have basically 4 or 5 minutes, really, before the first break here. So let's just spend this first section talking about maybe resources where people can read about the Oklahoma City bombing. Obviously, McCurtain.com is your website for the McCurtain Daily Gazette.
Well, and let me say this. We have changed websites so much, and each time we change them, the archives rarely get moved. So it's very hard to come up with a complete collection of the probably 300 or so stories I've written about the Oklahoma City bombing case. But eventually Roger Charles and I will have a book out probably within a year, and that'll help people. I always tell people that there was a good book written a number of years ago by Ambrose Evans Pritchard.
Right, The Secret Life of Bill Clinton.
Yeah, and then that was good, and then Mark Hamer wrote a great book, In Bad Company, about the Aryan Republican Army, which plays a central point in this whole study of the Oak Bomb case.
Now, didn't one of Timothy McVeigh's cellmates in federal prison just come out with a book not too long ago?
Oh, about a year or two ago, but you wonder, you know, how much credibility can you put into a book that's written by a guy on death row who ate his cellmate? Literally.
Well, what did you think of it? What's it called again?
Well, you know, I don't remember the title of it. He contacted us early on and said he was doing this, and he gave me some information during an interview that only McVeigh would have known, had not been published. Mm-hmm. And so clearly, and there was no doubt he had daily access to McVeigh. There were some parts of his book that I was concerned were straight out of our articles, and, you know, that's, I want to know that what I'm reading is really the right stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
I don't want a guy to regurgitate what's in my stories.
Right, and telling you he learned it from McVeigh.
I want him to tell me he learned it from McVeigh and prove it to me.
Right.
But he did tell me, I said, okay, you know, fella, tell me something that has never been in print that McVeigh told you that will impress me. And he told me a very, very, very important story about that clearly McVeigh had told him that, remember the Roger Moore gun robbery in Arkansas, which the FBI said was used to fund the bombing, and it was a very important part of this. That was supposed to be an assassination. That was a contract hit. And he did know this. And there's just no one outside the conspiracy would have known it. The only reason I knew it was because I had put that together from 6 or 7 different little pieces.
All right.
Finally come to the conclusion that...
All right, J.D., I'm going to have to hold you there.
Sure.
We're going out to this breaker, but it's a weekend interview show. We'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
right, my friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm talking with a man that the Southern Poverty Law Center calls a one-man conspiracy machine. I say he's a great reporter, deserves a Pulitzer Prize.
Well, I'll tell you what I think of the Southern Poverty Law Center. Now I know why they got after me early on. I couldn't understand why I was getting singled out when I started after these Nazis. You know, I thought the Southern Poverty Law Center was about getting rid of the Klan. And
sure, Klan Watch was how it was founded, right, Morris Dees?
Yeah, and so they, when I started in on this Strassmeyer, making these connections to Elohim City and all the Nazis over there, they started in on me. And this was right after the bombing. And now I know why, because they were sitting right in the middle of a sting operation, and now these victims are probably going to sue them for clean their clock.
Oh, so you're saying that the victims are going to be able to prove it?
I don't know. What else do you need but a memoranda from Louis III, a series of teletypes talking about the FBI, the FBI's relationship with the Southern Poverty Law Center, and the fact that the Southern Poverty Law Center is sitting at Elohim City with informants when Tim McVeigh is putting together the very last minutes of his plan. So clearly that's what's going on, and I want everybody to understand how this stuff works. At the time that this bombing occurs, Janet Reno had issued a set of parameters to the FBI as to what they could and could not do about infiltrating private organizations and churches and so forth. And Elohim City was off limits at that time. And so what has happened is the ATF, the FBI, and everybody was trying to figure out a way of getting around those directives. And so they were using all sorts of little tricks. For instance, the ATF used Carol Howe, who ostensibly was to investigate a Klan leader by the name of Dennis Mahon with White Aryan Resistance. They sent her out to his favorite place, Elohim City, and used her to gather information.
Oh, but they said they assigned her to investigate one person rather than the place.
But she's actually reporting on what's going on, which includes this German, Andreas Strassmeyer.
But so then what the FBI did was, in their attempts to get around Reno's rules, they went and got the Southern Poverty Law Center to run their narcs for them.
Yeah, and so the Southern Poverty Law Center not only infiltrated L.A. City, but they did the same thing up at Hayden Lake with the Aryan Nations compound up there when Butler was running that mess. And other organizations they infiltrated. And so what they would do, they would go in there, they would set up shop, and they'd get information. And when they had enough information to meet the criteria of Reno's had set, that there was indeed enough information there to open an investigation because they could make a case, then she would take over. They would actually hire some of the informants that that Morris Dees had set and put in place, and then they would take over the case. And so, you know, you have to look at this and say, wow, this must have been a really interesting idea that goes all the way up to Bill Clinton and his wife. I'll bet you anything. And I'll bet you anything that if there's a lawsuit by these victims before Hillary Clinton's campaign for president starts, there may not be a Hillary Clinton for president campaign. How much you want to bet?
Okay, now emphasize to me again exactly why is it that you think this must have come from the very top, from the White House, rather than just the Justice Department?
When you start circumventing the Constitution and literally the Justice Department goes out of its way to use, for instance, a German spy to conduct intelligence, to get intelligence information through a back channel through the German government, if you use a private charity to infiltrate the church, if you're using people to do what you cannot legally do, then, Scott, there's no way that you can call this anything else but illegal. And I'm sure that Janet Reno cleared it with the Clintons before she entered into this, because otherwise she'd be put on the streets fired. And she would have had to have cleared this with the Clintons.
And you're telling me now that families are already suing?
Oh, there's no question that they're gathering information. They've been gathering information on this for the last few months. They've been talking to lawyers. They have not filed a lawsuit. There already was a notice filed within the two-year statute of limitations on a Federal Tort Claims Act by a Connecticut law firm. They're certainly looking at this. They have been looking at suing the government for a failure to warn these people from going into the building for a number of years, but what they're waiting for is all the media to do all the work for them so that they can just kind of walk into the courthouse and say, here you go.
Right. All right, J.D., I want to read you a list of neo-Nazis, and I want you to tell me which ones of them weren't cops.
Which
Guthrie,
one? Were, I'm sorry?
Which ones of them were not cops?
Well, Guthrie, I'm suspicious of. I'm very suspicious of the head of the Aryan Republican Army. He had 8 years in the military, in the Navy. He'd been through SEAL school. He went through two explosives and ordnance schools, including nuke school at Indian Head, Maryland. Then, after he supposedly is run off from the Navy, he goes through two flight schools at Aubrey-Embry flight schools in Florida and in Arizona. That's very expensive. And then the next thing you know, he's infiltrated the Aryan nations and hanging out with all these guys. And then robbing banks.
Right, right, yeah, and leading
so
their bank robbery.
So I'm very suspicious about Richard Guthrie.
Okay, now Andre Strassmayr, you've already said, was working for the German government.
Yeah.
And now who else do you think he was working for besides the German government? CIA, FBI, Secret Service,
well,
or
Well, I think that they're feeding this back to the FBI. I think that Louis Freeh's very aware of what Andre Strassmayr is up to, and I think Janet Reno and Jamie Gorelick are very aware of what Mr. Strassmayr is doing. I find it very interesting that the man who introduces Mr. Strassmayr around to these different groups is a lawyer by the name of Kirk Lyons, mm-hmm. head of Black Mountain, North Carolina, who also has an ex-CIA pilot by the name of Dave Holloway working for him. Dave Holloway helps Strassmayr flee the country in January of 1996, once our newspaper has started publishing stories about this phone call from McVeigh to him, and we're starting to find out more and more about what Strassmayr was really up to at Elohim City. We had not located the confidential informant, Carol Howe, at that time, who told us later that Strassmayr was the one who planted the seed, let's go bomb some federal buildings.
And what about Mark Thomas and Michael Brescia?
Okay, Mark Thomas is a, I do believe, is a legitimate idiot Nazi. and Michael Brescia is very likely a true believer as well.
Okay, and Dennis Mahon, the former Grand Dragon?
Yeah,
or whatever?
No question, he's an informant. I talked to his handler about 2 months ago, who's retired from the FBI, and he said Dennis was always a cooperating witness for the FBI.
Okay, and what about Robert Millar and his family that ran Elohim City?
He was an informant. He didn't tell them everything, but he was he played both sides against the middle.
Okay, Shane and Chevy Kehoe?
They're just wild-eyed, meth-crazed Nazis. no question about that. They are just the worst of the worst.
All right, and now here goes tinfoil hat territory, and I'm sorry, but I got to ask you, and I really do think it's a fair question, Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols.
McVeigh, I guess, you know, Scott, I've got some pictures on my desk that are inexplicable. We haven't written the story, but there's more to McVeigh than meets the eye.
What you got in your picture there, J.D.?
I got pictures of the guy that looks, if he isn't Tim McVeigh, it's his twin, and he's at a military base long after he's left the military. He's in uniform. He's just asking to be caught on film. Very close up. We have a voice analysis that we have a good match on. I don't know what McVeigh's up to. He says he told some people he was part of a military organization, that this was a off the books military operation.
He told his sister that, right?
He told his sister that.
His
he confidant. Told some other people that.
Right. And now the official story is that in he wanted to be in special forces after the Gulf War, mm-hmm. the beginning of the Gulf War, and but he had back pain and so he washed out of the special forces and that was the last he ever saw of government service. Is that?
Yeah, but I've got pictures of him that I really do think are likely, very likely could be him. I mean, they're just perfect. Hmm. And there's a voice analysis that goes along with it.
You know, I hate to say it, but I think I've seen a picture of an ATF agent that was
about that. And then, see, that's the problem with pictures. You can get hung up. That picture, to me, never looked like him at all. Of course, I've interviewed McVeigh. I've been around the guy. So, anyway, I don't know what to do with these pictures. I don't know where we'll go with it.
Any idea who John Doe 2 in the sketch is?
That's Mike Brescia.
That's Mike Brescia.
No question who that is. I was told who he was from day one.
Now, that's I remember in Evans Ambrose Pritchard's book, they talked about how the FBI didn't even look into this guy until people were putting up not wanted posters.
Right.
All over the Northeast.
That's how we were
in his neighborhood, right?
Yeah, that's how we were forced. We were able to force them with the media out there to arrest him for bank robberies.
Now, but don't they say that this guy looked like he may have been Arab or olive skin, Mediterranean region, rather than a?
Not when you interview the witnesses. I've interviewed.
Oh, that's just the FBI 302 versions of what they said.
Well, I've interviewed Tom Kissinger. He said the guy was a young, pretty boy. I showed him the picture of Bresch. He said that's him.
And where is he now?
Oh, he's. I think they let him out of jail. He's been released for about 2 years. You know, he pled guilty to a conspiracy to overthrow the government and bank robbery.
And they don't really mind that he blew up a federal building full of federal employees.
Well, but see, his roommate was Andy Strassmeyer. You see, if you go to Elohim City and you go after Strassmeyer, then you expose, well, who's Andy? Well, Strassmeyer, unless you shoot him, is going to tell people, you know, if you read, you know, and you read Ambrose's book, that the informant was the agent provocateur. And, of course, he's stuck with Carol Howe. And, of course, this last story that we've published, which I think is up on our website, that where we have the ATF agent admitting that she was warned ahead of time by Carol that there was going to be an Oklahoma federal building bomb.
Right, Angela Finley, Carol Howe drove her around on the route that they were going to take from when she had cased the building. I remember that.
There you go.
It's all
been sealed and hidden up until a few weeks ago.
All right, everybody, it's a weekend interview show. I'm talking with J.D. Cash. We'll be right back. My friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton, and I'm talking with J.D. Cash from the McCurtain County Gazette. And they're available at McCurtain.com. Just Mick, like an Irish word, and curtain, like it's hanging in your windows. McCurtain.com.
Yeah.
And J.D. Cash is an excellent reporter. He's been writing about the Oklahoma bombing for 10.5 years now.
Incessantly writing about it.
Yeah.
But you know what, Scott? If you stay with something long enough, people would be surprised. This is a very complicated case, and it has been so difficult to get to the bottom of it because from the very beginning, no one who really knew what was going on wanted to discuss it. No one wanted to claim knowing McVeigh. I mean, this was a horrific crime. I had a number of my friends killed in it. A lot of people that I worked with were killed in it. And I started this thing just to write a book about, you know, for the Oklahoma history books, you know, just about what happened. I had no idea what I was walking into. I had no doubt that what the FBI was telling me was accurate, that there was just two people involved. I didn't know anything about the white power movement. I thought the Klan was dead. I thought if the FBI told you something, you should believe it because they were honest people. Now, I've really had this has been an eye-opening experience.
I have to tell you, listening to the last segment, you know, going back thinking during the break, what we just have gone over here, we have this neo-Nazi bank robbery ring. They have their hideout at Elohim City, their little mud hut and trailer compound where they all stay.
Which is along the right there at Fort Smith, right along the Oklahoma-Arkansas border.
Right. And the vast majority of these guys are federal cops. And the question comes up of who's zooming who? Are we talking about a sting operation that went bad? Are we talking about an operation where the plan was all along for the state to blow up their own building so that they could play victim?
One wouldn't think. Now, what they were trying to do, whoever is really behind this, whether it's the German government, you know, Strassmeyer clearly is the guy who's carrying this stuff around in his head. He knows what happened. And his dad has passed away in the last couple of 3 years, so he's in real trouble. His dad was very politically connected in Germany. He was Helmut Kohl's chief of staff at one time. He was Secretary of State to Berlin. With his father, with Andrei Strassmeyer's father dead, Andy Strassmeyer's walking around with a very, very, very short timeline right now. And if he had a lick of sense, he would get with a publisher and he would go to like Der Spiegel and tell his story and get it out. Because, you know, dead men tell no tales. He's a fool for walking around with this secret.
Yep.
And, you know, Congressman Rohrabacher from California has tried to link up with him. Strassmeyer stood him up after weeks of negotiations for a meeting, and the congressman went out to Germany. I mean, this guy is, I'll tell you what's going to happen. These victims are going to finally get enough information from this stuff that they're going to go, and they're probably going to start walking around the federal building in around the U.S. Attorney's Office in Oklahoma City and demanding that this case be reopened, and they're going to start to get a national attention. And Andy Strassmeyer is going to find himself picked up by the FBI and transported to a grand jury in the United States. And he's going to be in a lot of trouble. And he should be.
The last time we talked, you told me that you thought you knew who built the truck bomb, but you wouldn't tell me their names.
Yeah, I do know.
And you're waiting for your book to come
out? I have no doubt who built it, who was qualified to build it, and who was associated with McVeigh, and who took off and didn't go to work during that period of time. And that is one of the things we're going to save for the book. I'm sure you can understand that after all these articles, we want to save some new material. And now, if somebody wants to send me an invitation to a grand jury, I'll be happy to tell those folks.
Uh-huh. Now, these guys, can you tell me at least if you think they built the bomb at Gary State Lake like the feds
said? No.
Entirely different scenario from Gary State Lake.
The bomb's final construction was done in the Bricktown area, about six blocks from the building. You don't build an ampho bomb and transport it 242 miles.
See, that's what I'm saying.
Well, and you know how I learned that? I went to Belfast and talked to the best guys building ampho bombs and Dr. Thomas Marshall, who was the coroner there in Belfast for 25 years, who investigated over 200 truck bombings. And he told me how the system works.
Yeah,
I mean, that's my research into it.
Well, I remember Stephen Jones in his book, Others Unknown, he went and talked to the Scotland Yard, and he said, here's my client's recipe for the bomb he made. And they laughed and said, is your client still alive? And he said, yeah. And they said, well, then your client didn't make this bomb.
No, he didn't. Tim McVeigh's just a mule. He's a, you know, truck driver. He's a nobody.
Why do you think McVeigh went ahead and let himself be executed over?
Oh, he's a nobody.
Well,
I mean,
but
he was caught up in methamphetamines.
Come on, JD. He could have written you a letter and spilled his guts.
Well, then
we let them put him to death.
If he would have told the truth, then he would have been a nobody. His buddies in the movement told him that they would take over. You know, he believes in the Turner Diaries. He really does, or did. He can go to his grave thinking that they're going to build statues to him of him in this new America after the Nazis take over.
So he wasn't taking the blame. He was taking the credit.
He was taking credit, the honor of it all. He was finally somebody. And after you meet his father and you talk to his father, which I have at length, you come away with the impression, and as I said, I've interviewed McVeigh, his soft spot was the fact his father totally ignored him growing up. He was never anybody to his father, and his mother was a complete mess who left the family when he was very young. Here was a kid who, if his dad had just taken him camping, probably would have never been involved in this at all.
All right, everybody. We're talking with J.D. Cash from the McCurtain County Gazette, all about the Oklahoma City bombing. It's the weekend interview show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm talking with J.D. Cash, and I'm trying to get my head wrapped around this Oklahoma bombing story. It's so complicated. There's so many different facets to it. There's no way to even get, you know, a percent of it out in a one-hour interview. But, you know, really, we ought to talk about the reason that all this stuff is back in the news and you have so much new stuff to write about. It's because of the murder of a guy named Kenneth Trenadue and the vengeance that belongs to his brother, Jesse. Why don't you tell us about what's going on in that case, Jerry?
Yeah, back in August of 1995, there was a guy who had broken his probation agreement and had skipped his meetings with his probation officer. Who was a former bank robber who was picked up crossing the Mexican border into the United States south of San Diego in August of 1995. And then he was brought to the Federal Transfer Center in Oklahoma City. And within 48 hours or 72 hours, he's put into a solitary confinement unit, the SHU unit, solitary housing unit of this brand-new facility, which is state-of-the-art, which is absolutely suicide-proof. I want to emphasize this. This was designed by the very best penal experts in the United States and, I guess, in the world. Suicide-proof. No, nobody could kill themselves there. And the next thing you know, he's telling a couple of guards, it's recorded in the documents, that they've got him mixed up with somebody. Now, he's being held there under his alias, which I find very interesting. Here's a guy who's been out of prison for a number of years. Why would the FBI, or why would the Bureau of Prisons have this guy registered at this prison under a different name than his own?
Especially when he's trying to make the case to them that, hey, you have a case of mistaken identity. This is who I really am.
Well, I mean, this is all very strange, but they're trying to link him. But he says, I must have stepped into some real heavy shit. These guys have me mixed up with somebody else. Now, they're using his name he used as a bank robber. So that is his real alias. But, you know, when you don't go into the penal system under aliases unless there's something else going on. But the long and short of it is, within 24 hours of having been in that unit, he's talked to his family and everything's fine. The only thing he's up for is drinking beer on probation. He's got a wife with a new baby. He knows he's going to be going home in 2 or 3 weeks. He's going to have to start going to see his parole officer and all that stuff. It's no big deal. There's nothing going on. He hasn't been arrested for doing any criminal activity. He just doesn't check in with the parole officer because they were going to start giving him urine tests because he wanted to drink beer and they said he couldn't. It's a nothing deal in the whole scheme of the entire Bureau of Prison System. So the next thing you know, his brother, who's a very well-known civil attorney in Salt Lake City, gets a call and says, your brother, Kenny, has committed suicide. We'd like to cremate the body. And he says, no, send the body here. And so the body arrives. They take the makeup off that the funeral home would put on there, and they find one of the most horribly beaten bodies of any human being you can imagine. His skull was busted open 3 places. His throat was cut. He has stun gun blisters all over his body. He's bruised. He's beaten. He was beaten to death. He was beaten to death in the SHU unit, and he's beaten to death during, obviously, some sort of an interrogation because he's in solitary confinement. This is not other prisoners. And so anyway, his brother takes on this long investigation, and eventually he reads some stuff that I've written, and he sends me a note, calls me. And I said, you know, Jesse, I've always thought, just in the back of my mind, that there was something really strange about your brother's murder and how this, clearly, there's been so many millions of dollars spent by the Department of Justice to cover the whole thing up. I wonder if there's got to be something more to this than just some guards having some fun beating a guy to death. So anyway, he sends me a bunch of material. I start in on just doing some checking, making some phone calls, and pretty soon it became clear to me that the something else was that he was tortured for information because they believed that he was involved with the Aryan Republican Army and with McVeigh and the bombing. They were looking for the ARA at that time, the leaders.
Who was it that they mistook him for?
Well, McVeigh told Jesse later that he was been mistaken. He believed that he had been mistaken for Richard Guthrie. Poor old Kenny Trinidad had the exact tattoo that the FBI was looking for. He was driving the vehicle they were looking for. He was an ex-bank robber, and they knew McVeigh was involved in bank robberies because his sister had told the FBI on May the 11th during interrogation that her brother had been a bank robber and that she laundered some money from her job. And so Kenny Trinidad, coming out of Mexico with this very unusual dragon tattoo on his arm, exactly where the witnesses said was one of the guys that was hanging around McVeigh, had a tattoo, driving the old Chevy pickup, brown pickup. All of these things, you know, and he had this heavy, he was a bodybuilder. There was a guy hanging around McVeigh that was a bodybuilder. So they tortured him until they killed him. And Kenny Trinity was the kind of guy that he would go to his death. He was just a tough guy. You know, he would never give up anything. And so anyway, his brother, Jesse, starts filing Freedom of Information Act requests, and they get into this area of the Southern Poverty Law Center. We had been given a document from an ex-FBI agent who was a whistleblower, which said that the Southern Poverty Law Center was involved in this. And so that's where Jesse started his hunt, and that's where we found now about 87 pages corroborating the Southern Poverty Law Center was part of a sting operation out there in L.A. City.
And now there's something about the medical examiner in Kenneth Trinity's death where I guess basically he's come forward and said that he always did think it wasn't a suicide or something like that, right?
Yeah, the medical examiner was intensely pressured by the FBI to say that this guy committed suicide. This went on for years until he finally caved in. Now he's coming forward. I understand there's a big story coming out on this, saying that he finally just caved in under tremendous pressure from the FBI.
Now, somewhere, I think it was in one of your articles, it said that this medical examiner, Dr. Fred Jordan is his name, that he had written a letter to the IRS asking for protection. What's
that
about?
Yeah, he said, you guys might as well come in and audit me because I know they're threatening me with all retaliation imaginable.
So go ahead and see what I have.
Go ahead and start the damn audit.
Yeah.
And Fred Jordan, he got a visit from some thugs that worked for the Oklahoma County DA's office that are just thugs. That were involved with trying to get him to change his story. One of them was a lawyer who's since left the state. He's causing a lot of trouble in other places. One of them was a cop that went on and collected some money for later in the private sector to try to, from the FBI, they hired him as an expert to write a report saying that Trinity had been, was a suicide case. I mean, this has been the sleaziest mess that I've ever seen in my entire life. And there is a big story coming out in the next day or two about Fred Jordan, the medical examiner, saying, and that's what I understand, it's an AP story, that they really beat me around, you know, and forced me to do this. And we've got a heck of a story coming out tomorrow in our Sunday paper where one of the original Oak Bomb commanders, top FBI agents, is coming forward saying this thing is a mess and we need a new grand jury on the Oklahoma City bombing case.
Oh, really? Who's that? Coulson or?
Well, I'm not going to say. It's in our tomorrow's edition. We're going to post it on our website Monday, www.curtain.com. That's MCCURTAIN. Our publisher is very finicky about not giving away the whole story. He wants to see our people who buy our paper get the story first, and then our website gets it next. And so by Monday morning, we'll have this up on the website, and it will shock people inside the FBI, I can guarantee you that. When they see one of their top former commanders, there was five commanders of that case originally, and they all left the case because they had, they knew what was coming. And here comes Danny Deffenbaugh, who had never had any of the experience that these guys had. And he comes in there, and the next thing you know, he starts hiding documents and all this other stuff. That's where the 4,000 documents are found later that relate to the Aryan Republican Army and other groups that McVeigh was involved with. That of course, this delays McVeigh's execution. So we're starting to get some guys that are going to church, and I remind people this. These are good men who can't stand living with this secret. They're coming forward a little bit at a time saying there's more to this. And you know what else he says?
What did he say?
He said it's Elohim sitting in Strassmeyer, and that's where they need to drag every one of those people out of Elohim City and put them in front of the grand jury and then charge them.
Well, we know there have been FBI agents coming out all along, like right before McVeigh's execution when Rick Ojeda came out.
Rick Ojeda, yep.
And I've interviewed him, and he told me that his investigations, the story that he was following that his bosses wouldn't let him finish up on was the story of Strassmeyer and Elohim City.
Yeah. Rick's a first-class guy. I think the world of him. They tried to ruin his life for doing his job.
Well, and they tried to ruin this, the Trinity family, too, didn't they?
Oh, they tried
everything. The feds accused Jesse Trinity of mutilating his own brother's body to try to blame it on them?
Oh, they tried to say that he tried to pay off witnesses and that he did this, that, and the other. This is a first-class gentleman. I have never met a finer lawyer. When you read his filings, he is, and I have a law degree. I'm going to tell you what, he is just outstanding.
Well, and I read a quote of his where he said, look, I'm not trying to get into, I think this is what he told the New American Magazine, so I'm not even trying to get into the Oklahoma bombing case here. Somebody murdered my brother, and I'm trying to get to the bottom of it.
That's it.
You know?
That's
what
it.
Am I going to do? And then the feds say, oh, well, the reason he looks like he's all covered in bruises is because he had AIDS.
Had what? No, and of course, that was a lie. He didn't have AIDS.
I mean, imagine the level that they will stoop to.
They will stoop to anything. And this
that's pretty
trash.
Low.
Now, you know, they tried to fix, and this trash that we've got down there, and there's an election coming up for the Oklahoma County District Attorney's Office, and they've got to clean that place out. The voters in Oklahoma City need to wake up, and they need to clean out the last vestiges of this crap that Bob Macy left them with. They've got this guy by the name of Lane down there who is a just another, he's a reincarnation of Bob Macy. He's keeping this cover-up going. His staff came up to McAllister and tried to fix the jury in the Nichols case. And they put some people on there that were related to one of the members of the DA's office.
And, oh, really? On the Nichols jury?
And it came up before the trial starts, and so they had to get rid of several members of the jury. I mean, this, they were a bunch of Italians. This, there is no end to the cover-up. This is the most incredible mess, the sleaziest stuff. And, of course, naturally, nobody ever gets disbarred. Nothing ever happens to these lawyers that, you know, that take over the case up in Denver and tell FBI agents to quit sending them evidence that other people were involved, like Rick Ojeda sworn to. This is unreal.
Yeah, well, and the New York Times has never run a story that had anything to do with Elohim.
Well, I'll tell you why. They sent a reporter down there who's no longer with them. Her name is Joe Thomas, who belonged in that courtroom about as much as a marshmallow did. They sent the weakest character who's just a nobody in there to cover it. Some frumpy old gal that had never been to Elohim City, never went to Elohim City, and just sat around and said, "I'm with the New York Times."
And isn't it funny how, I don't know if they ever printed any of this in the Times itself, but the New York Times star reporter Judith Miller.
Oh God, look at her.
She was partners with Lori Milroy when they wrote all their conspiracy theory books trying to pin this bombing on Saddam Hussein.
And wouldn't you love to know if who's sleeping with who in that deal? The Libby thing. That's what the New York Times has intimated, that there was a relationship there between her and Libby. That was how the White House was able to dump this garbage on the American people through using the New York Times to do it.
Well, sure, and you just read Lori Milroy's books. They're all dedicated to Dick Cheney, Scooter Libby, Paul Wolfowitz.
Oh, God, help us all.
Thank you so much, American Enterprise Institute, for helping me write this book.
Yeah.
And then, Richard Clark, in his book, Against All Enemies, he says on September 12th, he walked into the Situation Room or whatever, and there's Wolfowitz explaining to Bush the Milroy conspiracy theory about how Ramzi Youssef is really an Iraqi working for Saddam Hussein, and he did the Oklahoma bombing and all that.
Well, I can guarantee you one thing. One of the most humorous parts about this is that the Nazis were in bed with the Arabs, and when that day ever happens, please, you know, call me. Call me when you have the proof. Because both organizations hate each other with a perfect passion. This story about, well, they both hate the Jews. Well, the only people they hate more than the Jews are each other. And these Klan groups don't even get along with each other.
I'm not so sure.
And the Arabs don't get along with each other.
Well, it's true. I mean, there's lots of different factions and lots of different degrees of cooperation that can be taking place. I don't wholly discount Terry Nichols' visits with
Youssef. I can assure you that there's nothing to that deal, and I can assure you that the books that have been written trying to put him there are frauds, and the people who wrote them are frauds.
Really? Because now this isn't, we're not talking about whether Youssef was Iraqi or not. We're just talking about whether Nichols was meeting
Nichols
with Youssef.
Nichols had no contacts whatsoever with any Arabs in the Middle East or in the Philippines.
Because, you know, the day of the bombing, Murad took credit.
The bomb was built by guys that knew, that had experience with AMFO bombs, that were U.S. citizens, that had been building those things almost on a daily basis.
Former military guys. Then.
Mining guys, blasters, guys who do it for a living. That's who blew up that. That's who designed the bomb.
So
that's who built the bomb.
It's either soldiers or guys that work at the quarry, one or the other there, I guess.
These are miners. These are gold miners. One of them has a PhD from a university. It was his hobby to blow up stuff. He hooked up with another guy. They were into meth, and they were into the Arizona Patriots. They were into the whole thing. The FBI knows who they are. They're still investigating them. I have some current 302s on them. What they're doing is they're sitting around thinking, well, okay, if this thing gets out of hand, we'll go ahead and bust these guys. They're still doing interviews about them.
Wait, you say you have the 302s?
That I certainly do. Yes. The FBI is still looking at these guys. They know who built. They know exactly who these guys are, and they know the role that they played in this. But here again, if you open the wider conspiracy, the problem is that they can rat out Michael Fortier. Michael Fortier was a contract bomber. I'm not going to get into the story. It's a long story. But Michael Fortier collected $2,000 in February of 1995 to blow up a guy's house. Now, if this comes out and McVeigh's lawyers find out about this, or Nichols's lawyers, suddenly the government star witness is a contract bomber who would say anything to get out of the trouble he's in for the contract bombing.
Sure, yeah, and he is the star witness against
him. He's our star witness. He leads him right back to these other two guys.
All right. Well, when we get back, I want to ask you about the info bomb, because I know the FBI lied about their so-called evidence that proved that it was ammonium nitrate and fuel oil. We'll be right back. It's the Weekend Interview Show. All right, my friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm wrapping up here with J.D. Cash from the McCurtain County Gazette. They're available at mccurtain.com. And I also want to say real quickly a couple other resources. The final report of the Oklahoma City Bombing Investigation Committee, Stephen Jones' book, Others Unknown, Evans Ambrose Pritchard's book, The Secret Life of Bill Clinton, William Jasper at the New American Magazine, the John Birch Society's magazine, has done excellent research on this topic for the last 10.5 years, as has my guest. Are there not movies coming out or that have come out about this?
I've done 9 or 10 documentaries about it. And
9 or 10 of them?
Yeah.
Can you give me the names of some?
Well, I guess probably there was a couple that I sort of liked. The History Channel did a decent job. Lance Horry was the director. They played around with the Arab stuff, which is just as asinine, but it's sexy. And then they had, the one that probably came the closest to being accurate was one I did for London Channel 4.
Is it available online anywhere or anything?
John Ronson, R-O-N-S-O-N. I can't remember the title of it. I've worked on so many of these different things. Some of them I won't even mention because I had to go to court to sue some of these companies. Well, one particular company that just absolutely raped me. And their documentary turned out to be garbage after 2 years of hard work. I'm working with another British director, producer, on a feature film now. And we're getting some interest. I want to make one really good film about this.
Yeah,
and that's what I'm working on.
I have to tell you, when I entertain the possibilities about Nichols' connections with Yosef and with other jihadists in America, the best information I have about that is from the New American Magazine. And
well, and it's just
Jasper. Right. Jasper seems to, make some connections between local Oklahoma jihadists.
Bill Jasper flies to Oklahoma City. I'm going to tell you the truth. Call him up, man. Tell him, play this tape. Bill Jasper came to Oklahoma City after I'd write a story. He'd get the information, go back, and write the story, put his name on it. That's what he's done for years.
Okay.
This Arab thing is just crap.
All right, well, his most recent story definitely cites you.
I'm sorry?
His most recent story in The New American definitely gives you credit. I don't think he's trying to plagiarize it as much as say, hey, look what J.D. Cash found.
I don't remember seeing my name in that story anywhere, but if he did, he probably should, because he's been following my work for years, and regurgitating it in the New American.
Yeah.
And that's, he doesn't spend any time in the trenches. He did not infiltrate the neo-Nazi movement as I did. And if you can find anybody from Kansas that ever hung around with the Moro Indians of the Philippines, you'll find a dead body. They eat people from the United States. The Arabs, the most radical elements of the Islamic groups in those areas, ate the Americans. If they had looked up and seen this little pigeon, Terry Nichols, wandering through the forest asking for instructions on how to build a bomb, they'd have cut his head off. It's that simple. If you want to know how to build an ampho bomb, the information is no further away than an Arizona mining company.
Let me
That's
ask you real quick. I'm sorry, we have less than a minute, but let me ask you real quick. Frederick Whitehurst testified that Stephen Burmeister lied when he said they found the ammonium nitrate crystals. You still think it was ammonium nitrate?
I know it was. Absolutely, it was ammonium nitrate mixed with racing fuel.
Do you have any idea why they would make up their evidence to so-called prove it in court?
I can't answer that question in less than a minute, but yeah, it was an ampho bomb.
It certainly
was.
All right, I'm sorry we're all out of time,
what,
J.D.
What Burmeister lied about was how they learned of it.
Right, right.
How they he learned of the evidence.
All right, everybody, it's J.D. Cash. He writes for the McCurtain County Gazette, McCurtain.com. Thanks a lot for your time.
Mm-hmm.
All right, talk soon. We'll be right back with the Lane Castle.